Next case on the call, State v. Long, case number A22-504, State v. Long.
May it please the court, my name is Trevin Preble. I represent Ryan Long, who's the appellant in this case. This is a case that's on appeal from the Lancaster County District Court. I was not trial counsel in this case. I am counsel on appeal. I would like to focus mainly on the first error that we put forth in our brief, and that is whether or not the court erred by overruling the appellant's objection regarding the use of the text messages and not properly authenticating those text messages, and that they were also hearsay with no exception available for admission. Specifically, what I'd like to say, when I look at these cases, I think what would have happened had we not had this evidence? Had we had, instead of those text messages, we would have had the individual who wrote the text messages in court to testify about it. So that individual would be on the stand, and anything that they had said would be objected to as hearsay. So none of those statements that were made on the other side of the text messages would have been allowed in into the courtroom.
Even if the response to the objection was not offering it for the truth of the matter, but offering it for the effect on the listener, when the listener is the defendant who kind of affirms the sentence.
Right, and so I think whenever we say that, there's a little bit of fallacy in that, because we say it's not offered for the truth of the matter asserted. Well, in this case, they're saying that it's for the effect on the listener, but by letting these in, even with those limiting instructions, essentially the statements made by the unknown person who they're saying is Mr. Garcia automatically become for the truth of the matter asserted based on my client's responses. So
just to give context to your client's response?
Well, and that's a good question. So the example I would give is someone sent me a text message that said, you know, why did you shoot that gun? And I respond with, well, let's have a barbecue this weekend. Am I adopting their assertion that I shot a gun, or am I talking about something completely different? And that's, I think, the issue is by letting those messages in the first place, which again would never have been allowed, I believe, under a hearsay argument, had that person been there to testify. It's essentially an end run around my client being able to confront Mr. Garcia, and I think the state could have had Mr. Garcia present, didn't try. It goes a little bit to our ineffective assistance of counsel, that trial counsel could have also tried to get Mr. Garcia there to testify, but instead we're left with these text messages that the only way my client felt like he could explain what was being said was he was essentially forced then to take the stand during trial and subject himself to cross-examination and then also having to explain these text messages.
So you would acknowledge that the responses come in, right, as admissions, right?
Correct. I think my client's statements would automatically come in because they're a party opponent. The question is are the other statements coming in, and do they meet the exception for hearsay? And I don't believe that they do.
So you think that we should just put in responses to text and not be able to get any context to what you're responding to, even though the responses come in? That's your position?
That would be the position that I would have, yes. And I think that happens a lot, in that there's a lot of things that party opponents will say, but we can't always get in why they said them, because other stuff is hearsay, and if it doesn't meet the exception. What I would also note is that these text messages occurred 4 days later, so they weren't contemporaneous with the events that were happening. So I don't know that these statements or these text messages were talking about or related to the actual incident that my client was on trial for. The other thing that I would note is This case is a little different than Savage, which the trial court relied on to allow these text messages in, and they're also different than Henry, which was mentioned in the briefs submitted by the parties. In Savage, they were just one-sided conversations made by the defendant in that case, from my reading of that case. So that individual was selling drugs, and it was clear from the text messages that she was sending or he was sending that their statements were clear that they were selling drugs, that they were offering people to buy drugs. And so those, of course, as I've already said, would be allowed to come in. When looking at the Henry case, in that case, you also had another person who said that they saw the messages. So you've got further corroboration that these messages were being sent and received by the individuals who they say that sent and received them. The issue in this case is we don't have the party who allegedly sent the messages to my client. So you don't know what they were talking about, you don't know who they are, and there's no opportunity to be able to cross-examine that person and confront them with questions that about why they sent those messages.
Well, we do have your client's testimony,
and
which I gather your argument is he was compelled to testify because of the prior ruling.
Correct. Without the prior ruling, I don't know what the state's case would have been nearly as strong. But my client essentially felt like he had to get on the stand to testify to try to give an explanation of those text messages that we believe shouldn't have been allowed in. If there's no further questions, I'd save my remaining time for rebuttal.
Just one question,
sure.
But he long did acknowledge that unidentified phone number was Garcia's.
Yes. Yeah. In my reading of the record, yes. And again, the argument would be that he wouldn't have ever had to do that had he not felt compelled to testify because of the previous court's ruling.
And Garcia was in the car with the victim when she was shot?
Allegedly, yes. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Melissa Vincent, and I represent the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Long has assigned three errors on appeal. I intend to address the first one and submit the other two on the brief unless the court has questions. Long claims the district court erred by admitting certain text messages into evidence because they were unfairly prejudicial, improperly authenticated, and hearsay. State disagrees. First and foremost, Long never objected to the text based on unfair prejudice and cannot do so for the first time on appeal. Consequently, that issue is not properly before you. And while I question whether his hearsay and authentication claims were properly preserved for appeal, both are without merit. Notably, both are directed at Garcia's texts, and each fail for a different reason. First, Garcia's texts were not offered for their truth, and thus were not hearsay. And as the court acknowledged, I believe with Mr. Preble's argument, they were offered to show the effect on the listener and provide context for his statements. That is a perfectly legitimate non-hearsay purpose, and the Supreme Court recently reaffirmed that same principle just last Friday in State v. Vaughn. Second, it's undisputed that Long authored the outgoing text, and based on King's testimony, it could be fairly inferred that Garcia authored the incoming text.
Can you address just kind of the circular argument that it's kind of a fallacy that it's not really admitted for the truth of the matter? Because, I mean, if the text message is, "Why did you shoot her?" and the response is, "You know, because I was mad at her," aren't you kind of saying that that first text is true? He shot her?
Right, but that goes to the heart of the admission, and that's the significance of it. So if he says, "Yeah, because I was mad," it's like, well, what's that in response to? Well, because someone has asserted that you shot her, and you're giving in a response to that. You're acknowledging that that's true by virtue of your response, and so we're seeing a lot of that here. And frankly, this notion that, well, gee, we don't know who it was on the other end of it. Given the circumstances of this offense, where it took place, the studio, the fact that he took her to another person's residence to bandage her up, put her up in a hotel, and then he was talking about, you blew that hammer 2 inches from my face. I still have the shell casing and the bullet. The bullet was never recovered. I mean, the notion that this was about something other than King's shooting, to me, is nonsense. I mean, I just don't see any way of saying that, well, they were talking about someone else. He got in a fight with somebody else. Someone else keyed his car. Someone else was playing with his phones. You know, to me, that just doesn't make any sense. I think circumstantially, through King's testimony, you have evidence that it's Garcia. Then you have Duffett going out and doing some additional investigation and tying that phone to Garcia. Several of the numbers that were called from that phone were to his relatives. He called those same numbers when he was incarcerated in the Lancaster County Jail. And I think that alone was sufficient to establish that Garcia was the other person, or the person on the other side of these text messages. And so I think that provides additional context for Long's admissions. And notably, one of the things that he said during his responses was that, I don't want to say too much over the phone. So some of them appear to be a little bit disjointed, but that's only because he's trying to be careful. But at the end, he kind of blows it when he comes back to the key, you know, the rental car being keyed and her playing with his phones, and that corroborative information was, he's clearly talking about King. So I don't think there's any legitimate dispute about whether Garcia was the person on the other side of that conversation.
Had Garcia actually taken the stand, would any of those conversations been admissible?
Well, not if it's an out-of-court statement, I mean, offered for its truth. I mean, even if they testify in at trial. But presumably, Long, and this ties into his ineffective assistance claim, he would have called Garcia to say, no, that's not really what happened. And, you know, I think he preserved that claim for post-conviction review, but, you know, after my review of the PSI and basically the circumstances of this offense, I think Garcia's got some serious credibility issues. So, I mean, I think he's preserved it, but I suspect it'll die a quick and painless death in the district court. But, you know, to the extent that there were any lingering doubts about whether Garcia was the author of those text messages, Long dispelled them during his case in chief. Both Long and Coleman corroborated key portions of King's testimony, which was consistent with the text. Coleman testified that Garcia was driving her car at the time that King was shot, and Long admitted that the texts were from Garcia, or at a minimum that he had received texts from Garcia from that number in the past. So given the circumstances, I don't believe there's any basis for finding that the text messages were improperly admitted. And I have nothing further unless the court has any additional questions.
So just give us a little more context since we're here. You would acknowledge that the statements on the phone that are being responded to are what qualifies definitional hearsay. You just think that they come in under an exception to the hearsay rule?
No, I'm saying that they're not hearsay because they're not offered for their truth. I mean, they're being offered to provide context and to show effect on the listener. And I think those are both valid purposes, and I tend to agree with it. The district court kind of blew by it, but the prosecutor did make an argument at the beginning that these were adoptive admissions, and I think that's true with certainly at least one of these statements, when he's talking about taking her to the hotel and getting her cleaned up, and then he says, yeah, you did that, and I appreciate that. So arguably, that's not hearsay because it qualifies as an adoptive admission, but the court basically admitted them wholesale because they gave context to the conversation and showed their effect on Long. And I think that was a legitimate non-hearsay purpose. But you're always going to have this argument that, well, gee, you're really offering them for their truth because they're showing, you know, they're showing that those statements are true. Well, that's kind of the whole point. You have to provide context to the conversation. So in order to give meaning to his statements, you have to know what they're in response to. So those are being offered for a non-hearsay purpose, as they were in this case. And in any event, the court gave an instruction, both verbally and in writing, that they were to consider them for that purpose and that purpose alone and not for their truth. But again, you have to put it in context because King has already testified. She wasn't a party to any of these text messages, and I don't think she was having contact with these people at this time. So all of these conversations are taking place after this incident has, and there is striking similarity between what she testified to at trial and what we're seeing in those text messages. They basically corroborate her story. And so I think they were properly admitted. I don't think the district court erred in that respect. And unless there are further questions, I would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. And how much time does counsel have?
3 minutes and 16 seconds.
Just a few things further that I would address that Appley's counsel had mentioned. I would say regarding the objection, I believe it was renewed. The objection was renewed on page 181 initially of the Bill of Exceptions, line 4 and 5. The trial counsel gave the reasons. Those reasons were given during previous interactions with the court, and clear that the court knew that the objections, what they were, and otherwise it would have asked counsel to be more specific as to what those objections were.
Which is advisable regardless, right?
Correct. 100%. But
so I'm just referring to the previously stated reasons, right, or grounds.
Right. And that's what counsel does. They go through and they give a relevance. They talk about the due process and confrontation clause. They talk about that they weren't complete messages. They didn't know who was on the other side, who was truly responding on the phone. And then you see in the Bill of Exceptions on page 163, she renewed the objections. And at that point, she did. And again, on page 188, she again renewed the objection to that particular exhibit number 32.
Well, it does get a little messy because at the hearing beforehand, she makes a whole lot of objections to a prior exhibit. And then when they get to exhibit 32, she says something specifically. And then at the trial just says my prior objection. So it's
correct.
Are all those ones to the other exhibit also applicable to this exhibit? Just a better practice.
And this is, as a matter of practice, yes, it would be best. And I would just say having tried a number of cases in front of this judge, she is generally very specific as to what are your objections. And so I feel in reading the transcript, again, knowing trial court judge the way that I do, she knew, and then I think in context you can tell the objections were all the previously stated relevance due process, not complete messages, and the list that the counsel had made previously. And it doesn't help that there were kind of hearings within hearings, a mini hearing before any of the evidence was actually submitted. Then they have the actual hearing for whether or not there's foundation, and then they go on to actually have the hearing in front of the jury and where the formal objections could be made. Again, I would point out these messages were sent 4 days later. So again, they weren't contemporaneous in time. I think that's important. And ultimately, this is what led my client to getting on the stand. Had these not come in, because he would not have had anything else to testify regarding, when the court, we believe, erred in allowing these messages in, it forced my client to testify, and that opened up a whole other can of worms. So for all of these reasons, we would ask that the court reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is...